the goal is to just help people building brands on Shopify and across channels, like figure out how to not have to make the same mistakes that I made.
Welcome to Honest E-commerce, a podcast dedicated to cutting through the BS and finding actionable advice for online store owners. I'm your host, Chase Clymer, and I believe running a direct-to-consumer brand does not have to be complicated or a guessing game. On this podcast, we interview founders and experts who are putting in the work and creating real results. I also share my own insights from running our top Shopify consultancy, Electric Eye. We cut the fluff in favor of facts to help you grow your e-commerce business. Let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Honest E-commerce. I'm your host, Chase Clymer. And today I'm welcoming to the show an amazing guest, Preston Rutherford. He is one of the co-founders at a small company called Chubbies. Preston, welcome to the show.
Chase, thank you so much. I'm pumped to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm excited. We've been trying to get this to happen for a while, and we finally get it done the day after Cyber Monday, which sounds crazy to most. So for the listeners, the ones that absolutely have been living under a rock in the D2C world, what are the types of products that Chubbies was bringing to market?
Oh, man. You know, mostly, I like to talk about it as weekend wear, but mostly tiny shorts for men, swim trunks, bright prints. But it all got started with some little tiny men's khaki shorts.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that, that first product. Where the actual idea for this business come from? You know, was it product idea first, or was there actually more intentive, like brand first? Where did we go?
Great question. I'd say it was a little bit of both, but yeah, absolutely. The product drove it in that there was a feeling that, I mean, take yourself back to 2011, which is crazy. That, I mean, at the time it was very much the Abercrombie and Fitch vibe of then. Today it's different, but of just like, you know, house music, spraying cologne in your face, people with six packs standing outside the front door of the store, making you feel like you're not cool enough to walk in. But product wise, you know, long, many pocketed cargo shorts, kind of like hiding the legs of the human was sort of the thing. So at the time there was like a product gap. Where it was just kind of like, I played rugby. Two of the other founders played soccer at Sanford. The other one spent a lot of time growing up in the Southeast where shorts are the norm. And we all loved just the retro vibe. The pictures of our dads on spring break, wearing the shorter shorts, having a great time. And so there was this ethos, this nostalgia that we felt needed to come back, this fun, this levity. So to your point, there was both sort of like a big product gap where we felt like we just want this thing and the only way we can get it right now is to either cut our shorts or to go to Goodwill. And the brand component as well, which was we just don't like the vibe of where we get our clothes, which is why we get stuff at Goodwill, because it's like I'm not going to go to a place that's like super, you know, coming off as like taking themselves too seriously. I'm not cool enough to shop there. Like, let's just flip the whole thing on its head and let's do the opposite thing, right? Let's just do some tiny shorts and have a lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely. So do you remember where kind of the ideation of like, hey, let's make our own short came from?
It was so there were four of us and we all had been working for 4 or 5 years out of college. I think we all realized around the same time that we're not really good at working for other people. So a little bit, it was four entrepreneurs looking for a company, looking for something to do. And so I'd say that was one point. The other was none of us studied computer science in college. So none of us were going to create the new social media platform, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas a few of us, like one of our friends started Instagram, one of our friends started Snapchat. I mean, it was kind of just crazy that that stuff was happening. That wasn't in the cards for us. So I was like, okay, well, we could do shorts. And then outside of that, it was the idea of, hey, yeah, we like shorts. We couldn't find it. Let's just try to do it. One of us, one of the four founders, Rainer, actually knew how to make clothing. You know, he had actually done that before. So he knew how to go about getting a sample and trying to figure that out. And Kyle, one of the other co-founders, he was in private equity. And so one of the spaces that he was analyzing was commerce and commerce enablement. So he knew that Shopify was not just getting started, but very, very early and had completely changed the cost, the time, the investment to just get a store up and running online. So you had both of those things. And then Tom and myself, we were just, I'd say, utility players, obsessed with like consumer psychology, trying to make people laugh, things like that. And so the four of us kind of coming together, I think made it possible to, you know, get something started. But more than anything, it was, we hate working for other people. Let's try to start something. And there are all these tailwinds on the Shopify front. There's this product gap. Let's just see if there's something fun we can do here.
Absolutely. Now, did you all jump all in, or were some people still working a full-time gig and this was a side hustle?
Yeah, no, it was the latter. So for the first, I don't know how long, more than a year, I think, we were nights and weekends. So, I mean, maybe on the surface, it seems like we're a bunch of dumb idiots, but I mean, we were pretty risk averse in that, you know, we had salaries and we had rent to pay and all this kind of stuff. So I think we were at close to like a $2 million run rate before we said, hey, let's actually go all in on this. And there were other, not just revenue, but there were other markers where it seemed like, okay, there's real traction here. There's a real pull here that it's demanding our full time. But no, it was very much nights and weekends. Let's just get this going and see if there's something there.
Cool. I want to come back to those markers and just talk about them to maybe there's some listeners out there now that are needing to understand if it's the right time to finally jump ship and go all in on what they've been building. But before that, I want to talk about you launch a new product in a new space. How the hell do you get people to pay attention to you? How are you getting people eyes on your product? How are you getting customers?
So funny. So 2011-ish. So TLDR, we started in person with most of it in San Francisco. So we all lived in San Francisco. All of our friends lived in San Francisco at the time. And the Square card reader, I mean, I feel so old saying this, had just become a thing where you could just plug it into your iPhone and swipe a credit card. Like Venmo, not a thing. PayPal, people, you know, that's how you had to take a credit card transaction. And what was really interesting is we would just wear the product ourselves and then sold it to a few of our friends. And we would get some test runs, put the product in our backpacks and go to brunch out in the city. And we would just be doing our thing. And people would come up to us either to tell us, you guys look like a bunch of idiots, I hate you, or what is going on? This is awesome. Where'd you get those shorts? What is this? And give them a little bit of the background and let them know that we have some. And then they would just like say, okay, I want them. Let me just put them on right now. I'll buy them off of you. And so that's sort of how it started. Like just real in-person interactions where we were effectively our customers, and then friends of ours were our customers, and then friends of friends were customers. And it was just one of those things where you got a lot of feedback in person before anything else. And then that started a little bit of a process of word of mouth or whatever it might be. So that allowed us to kind of get you were talking about markers, like what, is there something here or not? And I think all of our previous experiences, we had all had instances where it was like, okay, it's not clearly not working, but there's kind of apathy towards what we're doing. I know I specifically had an experience like that in a previous company. So that was one of my biggest things. I just don't want to create something where people are kind of just like, meh. And when we started to get the polarity of response, especially in an in-person context, it became obvious that, you know, there's something that we should at least keep pulling on the thread and see where it goes. And we can only really get that by doing things in person. Not that I'm telling people today to just, you know, start do your lemonade stand, but in kind of some ways, try it, you know, see what you can learn there. And then the second thing was we found that one of the things that we did was this kind of like college ambassador program where we found that how can we get into communities of people who would be super pumped about this product? I think that was maybe the second thing where, you know, we just kind of started this college ambassador program where there are people who, gosh, whether they're, they just couldn't get the product we were making as well. So it was also a little bit of validation. Hey, there are other people outside of the four of us who are totally crazy and our crazy friends who also seem to have this need. So, okay. seemingly there's something else there as well. And then the third thing was, I mean, of course, all these things are so obvious today, but just like UGC. And it was way less obvious that you should just take pictures of your friends and put them up on your company Instagram page. But that's all we did. And that's all we did sort of for the whole life of our business, which is just normal people doing normal stuff, having fun, wearing the product rather than the traditional overly produced, expensive, only hire a certain type of model, do a traditional photo shoot where everyone's just looking really serious, et cetera. Like we made a lot of fun of that over time, but very, very much just posting pictures of friends. And then it made it a lot easier to get those people who were tagged to share it and just get this whole, again, all this stuff is obvious right now, but at the time it was not very obvious, but just getting the ball rolling of, you know, people feeling like, hey, I love being a part of this. This is cool. This is something special. I don't feel like I'm selling anything to anyone. Like people are buying into this thing because it's authentic and it's fun. And, you know, all of the things that make it so possible for these things to kind of gain steam, if there's some foundational components there, which it did seem like there were.
Absolutely. It's something that I've talked about a few times on this. It's just like when you have an amazing product, it makes everything else so much easier. And if you get that flywheel started, everything starts to fall into place.
Yeah. And to be clear, thank you for saying amazing product. It was a very notable product. We had a lot of room to improve on quality. Like a lot of people just ripped the seams. There were a lot of things to do to get to actually having a great product that I think fulfilled the promise that we would make in the mind of the consumer or the customer. But no, I think having like a notable product that in some ways like did the selling for you, very distinctive. I couldn't say it wasn't a help. And it was just one of those things where, yeah, it was very different from what the norm was at the time. Now it's far more normal. There are shorter-ish shorts everywhere, like a 5.5-inch inseam or 7-inch inseam, which was very short in 2011. Again, I feel old, but it was just different. So part of it is just like, you kind of look dumb for a while at the beginning, but you feel like what you're doing is the right thing. And as long as you're internally validated enough to not quit while the whole world kind of comes around to the truth that you know, it'll work out.
Hey there, merchant. Are you tired of trying to navigate the wild world of e-commerce on your own? Are you looking for a partner to help you achieve your goals? Look no further than the Shopify Plus agency, Electric Eye. Our team has a proven track record of helping our clients make millions with strategic design and development. Whether you're migrating from a legacy platform to Shopify, designing a new theme for your store, or just looking to optimize what you already have, Electric Eye is the perfect partner for you. Electric Eye are true Shopify experts. Not only is our Shopify knowledge unparalleled, but we have partnerships with all the best tech in the Shopify ecosystem. And don't worry, we're easy to get a hold of. Our clients rave about our fast communication. So here's the deal. If you're an e-commerce business doing over $1 million a year, you can receive a complimentary Shopify diagnostic from our team of experts. That's free, personalized, strategic recommendations to improve your store and grow your business. To get started, head on over to electriceye.io/connect to schedule an intro call with one of our experts. That's electriceye.io/connect. Are you tired of your cash flow being tied up in inventory that takes ages to arrive from China? How many times have you missed out on potential sales during peak season due to inventory delays? Well, here's some news that might just change the game for you. Imagine increasing your lead time by 10x without ordering inventory in advance, reducing your inventory risk by over 66%, and enjoying 3 times better cash flow. Sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? Well, with Portless, this dream can become a reality. In the unpredictable world of inventory projections and holiday rushes, Portless is your reliable partner. They ship your products directly from China to your customers, keeping you stocked without the burden of additional storage fees. Say goodbye to the hassle of ordering inventory in advance. With Portless, you have access to factory MOQs and can replenish fast-moving products in just 3 to 5 days. Capitalize on demand, eliminate wastage, and get your precious inventory ready for sale within 2 to 4 days of manufacturing. No more waiting 45 to 60 days for cargo ship arrivals. Shipping to over 55 countries from their fulfillment center in China, Portless ensures your customers enjoy a seamless domestic experience with 6-day shipping and last mile tracking from trusted carriers like USPS UPS, Royal Mail, and Canada Post. The best part? It's cost-effective. Portless helps you improve your gross margins by up to 40% thanks to Section 321 eliminating fees and costs associated with traditional fulfillment options. Not only that, Portless ensures your products reach your customers on time while retaining the full domestic experience. Your customers can conveniently track their orders, and you get to keep the custom packaging they love. If you sign up before March 30th and mention this podcast, Honest E-Commerce, you'll get 20 cents off your pick and pack fees for every order for the first 3 months. That means if you're doing 10,000 orders a month, that's $2,000 a month in total savings, $6,000 for your first 3 months. But remember, you have to contact Portless before March 30th to get this deal. Ready to revolutionize your inventory and fulfillment process? Visit portless.com today and let them help you with your inventory and fulfillment needs. Today's episode is sponsored by IntelliGems, the ultimate A/B testing and profit optimization platform for Shopify merchants. You're investing tons of time and money to drive traffic to your store, but are you doing everything you can to convert that traffic into profits? With IntelliGems, you can stop guessing and start making strategic decisions. IntelliGems platform enables you to A/B test everything from themes to pricing so you can understand what makes your customers tick and click. Whether you're tweaking your UX, testing prices and offers, or trying out different shipping rates, IntelliGems provides real-time insights that can directly influence your store's profitability. Join the ranks of over 1,000 Shopify stores that are already maximizing their potential with IntelliGems. Setup is quick, and the results are undeniable. If you're not experimenting, you're leaving money on the table. It's that simple. Elevate your e-commerce strategy today. Visit intelligems.io/honesteCommerce and use code HONESTECOMMERCE for 10% off your first month. You can also find IntelliGems on the Shopify App Store and get a 7-day free trial. Now, obviously, you guys have had massive success and there was like some exits and whatnot. During kind of that scaling phase, do you remember, you know, kind of just what the day-to-day was for you? Like, what was your actual job trying to keep the pieces together and keep things growing?
Yeah. I mean, it was constantly changing, I would say, but a lot of similarities. So, I mean, I think, you know, at the beginning, it was very much Tom and I just trying to figure out what are we going to do? What are we going to talk about? Who are we going to be? Right. So, it was the only leverage you had were like product descriptions, product names, product photos. And then when you started doing a little bit of Facebook advertising, you're just trying to figure out, okay, how do we stand out? How do we look like something that doesn't look like an ad? How do we show people that we're putting so much effort into this and that it's surprising, that they're just like, holy shit, this is fun. This is awesome. Rather than, okay, here's a picture of a product and some discount, blah, blah, blah. So I'd say one of the takeaways, just a lot of effort and on things that maybe would be early things to get quote unquote outsourced. We really kind of put an inordinate amount of effort into that. So content, doing it in-house, owning it, not necessarily having high production value or high production quality, because we found for us that was like inversely proportional to the actual performance. But in terms of like what we did, it was just kind of like really, really working hard on doing the very, very basic things of trying to put things out into the world, content-wise, product-wise, that just when people see it, they're like, this is awesome. I love this. I feel great about this. And I'm going to share this with my friends. And then that permeated throughout, you know, everything we did and everything the team did. So for Tom and myself, it was very much build a brand. Why do people love what we're doing? How do we make people laugh? But then there's obviously a whole bunch of other stuff that has to happen in the business, making amazing products, making sure the ops are such to where we're actually able to send people the product and not run out of money. And it's hugely beneficial when you have co-founders there with you who can, you know, lift you up when you're down, push back on you when you're being an idiot, build on nuggets that you're kicking around. I mean, it's just, for me, that was like the biggest blessing of this whole thing, is getting to work with three of my best friends, you know, day in and day out, trying to just figure out what the heck we were doing, but always bringing it back to like, trying to just brighten our customer's day and our customer being our friends. So it was just like, how do we just like make our friends laugh all day, every day? And then give them amazing product that they love. So yeah, I mean, in terms of like what we did every day, I wouldn't say too different from what anyone else is doing, but, I think very fortunate to have great co-founders, very fortunate to be able to have the support to just go super, super deep on these things that I think really helped differentiate us, which was like the branding components, the marketing components, the fun components, the content components, which I think ended up kind of building this, you mentioned it earlier, this flywheel of just getting people to have this positive association, I hope, built up over time of like, okay, I know what these people are. I know what they're doing. I like it or I really don't like it. And that's okay, because there's enough people that hopefully will like it.
Absolutely. You mentioned, ops and making sure people could get the product that they wanted. What about returns? Obviously, we need to talk about something that's very unique about the Chubbies story and the Loops story to kind of spoil, you know, what we're going to talk about here. But it's pretty interesting to see a direct-to-consumer company build a solution for themselves, and then that solution evolve into a giant SaaS player in the same industries. How did this happen?
It's so funny, and totally stumbled into it, to your point, and you summarized it perfectly. But it's just kind of like, I mean, if anyone was operating when, you know, the genesis of this kind of came about, let's call it 14, 15, 2016, returns exchanges, super rough for the customer, for the company, for the team. And so there was clearly a problem to solve there. And as it relates to the impact on the company, I mean, I think one of the things that was just like such a bummer when you always saw it happen was just like, oh my gosh, that could have been an exchange, but it ended up being a return. There's something you could do about that. And then the amount of time our customer service team was spending just on the back and forth. Hey, send me a picture of your product. I mean, everyone, I think, gets the problems that existed, but maybe some people don't if they didn't have to deal with that kind of stuff. But it was just rough. And then from the customer perspective, it was like, why do I have to go through? Why do you want me to send you a picture of the product to make sure I adhered to the return policy, blah, blah, blah. Like, that was the most important thing for the customer. It was a really rough experience. So yeah, we had, I think, more than anything, four of us who started the business were really a bunch of nerds, and we love technology. We love building software to solve problems. And that's what we did. We did that a bunch to solve internal problems that we dealt with in the business. So this just happened to be another one of those instances, but where the product ended up being externally facing, and it was just enough of, hey, this is a problem facing other folks, other brands. And when they saw the returns experience, it was just kind of like, they came to us saying, hey, can we have that thing, that product that you have, where you're facilitating this returns and exchanges experience. And we were like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. This is just something that, you know, one of many things that we just built. And so it kind of organically happened. There was a pull there, and it was just a crazy process. And then ended up putting a, spinning up an entity, putting a great team in place to go out and actually pursue this vision, this great opportunity. And it's amazing to see what the team has done. And so very, very excited to see how the business has grown. I mean, it's been crazy, but yeah, super wild in the way that transpired. And I know a lot of operators like, oh, I've had this software idea that I've wanted to get out there. Oh, I built this tool for myself. And like, it's possible. It happened. I don't know if out of 100, how many times you could replicate it, but I know that a lot of e-com operators out there have felt like they've had something that they want to make it available to other folks. And I don't know. It's interesting. Like the thing we struggled with was distraction. Could we handle both a consumer brand and a software business? And we determined for us that we could not. So we decided to continue to focus 100% on, well, let's not say 100%, but effectively 100% on Chubbies, on the consumer brand, because we had seen other brands that had kind of tried to do both. Not to say that's not possible. We just realized we couldn't really do it. So yeah, totally, totally crazy story.
Yeah. And I mean, just to highlight some things that resonated with me is you went into it solving your own problem with no expectations of building a second business. And then it turning out that other people needed that same problem solved and it growing organically. I think that is maybe the best way that these type of things can happen. I think founders can get distracted by shiny objects, and they, you know, if you go at a problem expecting it to be a $50 million company, you lose sight of maybe the thing that's making you your real money right now. And then you have two potential failures on your hands.
Totally. It is such the ideal way that you, it's hard to plan around that though, right? But it is something to be open to. And, you know, I think we made the right call staying focused, because the shiny object can be like the worst possible thing and made so many mistakes just pursuing shiny object syndrome over and over again. So yeah, you're right. It's sort of lightning in the bottle moment, but the fundamentals of having a problem, understanding it so deeply, not even caring that you want to, if whether or not you'll be able to sell this to other people, but just let me solve this problem the way that it needs to be solved so that it solves my problem. And then whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Absolutely. Now, Preston, you've shared so much stuff with us so far. Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you think would resonate with our audience?
You know, I think one thing is, after having this whole thing that I'm trying to do now is try to be helpful to other folks who are building brands, because it's hard. We were very fortunate. And the benefit that being able to just build something on Shopify where you can make a product and make people's lives better, and bring your vision of what the world should look like to the world, so easily is just one of the coolest things ever. Like, it just gets me excited to no end. So one of the things that I hope I can be helpful is, one of the biggest mistakes we made over a long period of time was not understanding how to allocate our marketing resources to build for these like longer term outcomes, which was like actual profit generation. And I think that's one of the things that's affecting a lot of folks right now, because the Meta DTC customer acquisition economics are, for a lot of folks, somewhat challenging. And we had to deal with stuff almost a half decade ago, because Men's Tiny Shorts is a very kind of like consumer discretionary purchase. So I think that one of the things I'm trying to do is just write about it on LinkedIn. So I think that's like, if there's anything I can like do to give back outside of just this 25 minute conversation that we're having, it would be just, I'm trying to write about all of the mistakes I made on LinkedIn. And if you want to read it, great. The goal is to just help people building brands on Shopify and across channels, like figure out how to not have to make the same mistakes that I made. So to the extent that's helpful, great. Check it out. Would love your feedback. Would love to just try to like learn collaboratively, because that's the goal. It's not just like dictates. But I think that's the one thing that I would just want to mention that I hope can be, I can actually give back to everyone who's listening to this episode in such a way that I hope is like very tactically beneficial to the bottom line.
Absolutely. And I'll make sure to link to that in the show notes. Preston, I can't thank you enough for coming on, and I'm sure I'll have you back.
Awesome. Chase, grateful to be here, man. It was super fun. Have a good day. Love what you're doing, man.
We can't thank our guests enough for coming on the show and sharing their knowledge and journey with us. We've got a lot to think about and potentially add into our own businesses. You can find all the links in the show notes. You can subscribe to the newsletter at honestecommerce.co to get each episode delivered right into your inbox. If you're enjoying this content, consider leaving a review on iTunes. That really helps us out. Lastly, if you're a store owner looking for an amazing partner to help you get your Shopify store to the next level, reach out to Electric Eye at electriceye.io/connect. Until next time.